Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
What a beautiful day in Utah's Dixie. Sun is shining. It's in the 50s right now, which, if you ask me, is perfect. If you ask my wife, it's freezing. But welcome, everybody. This is the Andy Griffin Show. Adam Snow with me, Washington County Commissioner, this beautiful morning. Adam, thanks for coming, man.
Thanks for having me, as always, Andy. I'm going to have to agree with your wife. 50s is cold.
No,
70s. It's going to be 70s today, though. It's going to be a beautiful day.
It's going to be a
goodness, shame on you. It's beautiful. It is going to be beautiful this afternoon, but it's a little chilly right now.
Yeah, I like it. But I actually, I'm usually in here from 5 to 10, so I don't know how cold it is in the morning, except for what the computer tells me. But Adam, tell us a little bit about last night. Yeah, you got to go to a cool event over there at the Dixie Center. I didn't make it there last night, but tell us about it.
Yeah, it was a great event, actually. We had a lot of people there, hundreds and hundreds of people that were there. It was sponsored by the Washington County Republican Party, but it was a nonpartisan, really kind of a unity memorial prompted by the death of Charlie Kirk, but also it wasn't just let's come and remember Charlie Kirk, right? And there was certainly some of that. There was people that knew him personally, had worked at Turning Point, but also you know, the sheriff spoke and the attorney general spoke and Jason Chaffetz was the keynote speaker. So Congresswoman Celeste Malloy was there. And just spoke about how we move forward as a country, how we try and, you know, tone down political rhetoric and certainly political violence.
Yeah.
And the rhetoric that leads to violence and the calls for things. And, you know, it's, as you know, Andy, it's amazing the things that people just toss out and they just say it and they don't really think about the impact that their words might have.
Yeah.
And those words do lead to violence sometimes.
Do you think, Adam, I mean, you say that, and I understand what you're saying, but do you think, though, that some of it is intentional? Some of that rhetoric, just this weekend, that whole no president or no kings thing, and there were people photographed with, you know, mocking the assassination of Charlie Kirk and stuff, and I'm like, I agree. There are people that say things that maybe don't mean for them to be escalated into violence. But I think there are people out there, Adam, it feels like to me, who applaud the violence, who want the violence.
And 100%.
That's sad.
100%. Yeah. There are certainly people who are just sick and have such a superiority complex that they think that their way is so right that it actually justifies violence or death to those who might disagree with him. I don't think that's a massive group, though. I think that there are certainly some of those people. But I'm saying, even, you know, obviously Washington County is an extremely conservative county, right?
Right.
There's people that have, and I can say this, I know my wife's not listening because she's a school teacher and she's in class right now, but I haven't told her this, but they've called for, you know, the death of all three county commissioners and said, I mean, I've seen the post, right? This isn't a hearsay. I read it.
It was real.
And they said, you know, maybe if one of these guys gets assassinated in public, the others will listen. Wow. And we didn't, I didn't put too much thought into it. You know, I was like, okay, you know, it's a stupid comment. But one of the police departments took it seriously and went and knocked on her door. And she went, oh, my goodness, I didn't mean that. You know, I didn't actually want somebody to die. I was just, you know, so that's what I'm talking about with when people don't think about the meaning that their words have. And a lot of people say things without thinking that, wait, is that really what you want? Did you really want three husbands and fathers and people who are just trying to do the best they can to die? Is that what you asked for?
Yeah. A lot of it didn't seem real, and it feels like people maybe were like you said, they didn't really mean that. And then this Charlie Kirk thing happened, and all of a sudden it became all too real. And it made, I know personally, me, so the guy that did that is from here.
Yeah.
He could have, and I know I'm connecting dots that don't necessarily connect, but he could have said, instead of the big fish, Charlie Kirk, he could have said, I don't like the local conservative talk show host.
Yep.
He could have sat in that park over there and done to me what he did to Charlie Kirk. And I have to admit, the day we found out who it was, I was pretty shaken up.
Yeah.
Shook up. Anyway, it was actually Celeste Malloy. Celeste Malloy called me and she said, hey, I want to make do a little interview. It was after we were off the air, so the interview was going to play the next day. But she kind of, for lack of a better term, talked me off the proverbial ledge because I was, after this happened, I was like, what's it all for? What's it all worth when there are people out there like this kid from Washington City who really are going to act violently on behalf of their whatever belief it is. And like you said, they're so egotistical is really maybe the right word for it, that they believe their way is the only way and everyone that doesn't believe their way should die. And I was shaken up. And I'm grateful to Celeste for, you know, kind of talking to me and saying, listen, you know, this is an outlier. This is not something that's going to keep happening. She didn't believe. I don't believe now either. But it was something that made you think. And you getting that kind of a death threat, it's got to at least give you a little bit of pause.
It does. And it's empowering in some ways because you say, you know what, if nobody ever cares what you're doing at all, then maybe you're not doing anything right.
Good
right.
Point.
Good point. So, but it's not something that I look forward to, you know. I mean, I've got little kids, right? Yeah. I don't want to orphan them.
No.
But at the same time, I don't feel like you can ever back down and say, okay, well, now I'm going to go cower and hide. And that was kind of the message of last night was you have to stand for what's right. But there's more people who believe like you. And remember that, it's not, you know, Ronald Reagan said that if you agree with me 80% of the time, you're not my enemy, you're my friend, right?
Yeah.
You know, we may disagree on the other 20%, and you're going to disagree with somebody. I mean, I say this all the time. I love my wife more than any other person on this planet. We don't agree 100% of the time, right? I don't know anybody that I agree with 100% of the time who's not lying.
Yeah.
And so, so you're going to disagree with somebody. It doesn't mean you have to demonize and vilify and dehumanize somebody who disagrees with you a little bit. And even if they disagree with you a lot, they can still be human. You don't have to agree with them.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that death or violence is ever an acceptable outcome or way to deal with disagreement. And that was really the point of last night. And it was emotional, and it was celebratory at the same time for the things that Charlie stood for and for the things that we all need to, you know. It was a lot of call to action of, so now what, right? Therefore, what? So what do you do? So you have to go out. You stand up for the things that you believe in. Use your voice. Don't in fear be silenced, right?
Yeah.
And go and fight for the things that you want, but you fight peaceably and you fight in the right way because we have a constitution. We have laws for a reason, and we're not going to stoop to that level of just violence to get your way.
The other thing too, and this has come in the weeks following what happened to Charlie Kirk, is that whatever intention this assassin had, it's backfired on him.
Huge.
Instead of, you know, kill the fascist, whatever mindset he had, it has backfired. It is actually the Charlie Kirk message, the Charlie Kirk movement, the Turning Point movement has exploded, which is incredible.
I mean, we actually had a representative from Turning Point there last night, and the regional director. And I mean, there was 2,100 roughly chapters of Turning Point around the country at the time of Charlie's assassination. There's over 125,000.
Oh,
now.
Oh my gosh.
That, yeah, you want to talk about backfiring? It backfired in a huge way.
Yeah, by 100 times. Yeah.
Yeah. It's massive. That's a great thing. I didn't know Charlie personally. I did love his videos. I watched them all the time. It's actually how I go to bed. I have a hard time falling asleep at night, and so I sat and watched, put my AirPods in and watched Charlie Kirk videos until I fell asleep.
One thing I loved about him, and again, we don't want to make this whole show about that, but Charlie Kirk was so good at respecting the person without agreeing with them, which is what, I mean, kind of that's the message you've been talking about the whole time here, Adam, is he may not agree. They may not agree with him, but he may not agree with them. But he had a way of, you know, all right, guys, shut up. I want to hear what they have to say. I want to hear their message. And then we'll debate and talk about it like grown-ups instead of, you know, throwing the temper tantrum like the Democrats and the Senate are doing right now about the budget. But yeah. I love that.
He did. He was excellent at that, better than probably anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But still able to pick on things, you know, when they say, like you just said, fascist a second ago, you know. I loved when he'd call them out. Okay, so let's just, you said your first line and we're going to pick that first word. What is fascism, right? What is that? What is fascism? Yeah. And they'd, it's somebody who...
It's a bad guy.
Really mean.
Yeah.
That is not what fascism is. It's the control of the means of production. That's what fascism is.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I guess you're... So tell me, how is Donald Trump, or how is, you know, whoever, how is Mike Lee a fascist? You just mean you disagree with him. And, but again, words matter, right?
Yeah.
What you say matters. You don't just get to throw out some word as though, you know, you're a Nazi. How on earth is he...
Yeah, it's not.
Well, did you know that Donald Trump and Adolf Hitler were both white men? You know, I mean, yeah,
well, there
are some similarities, yeah, I guess, in some ways, but there's a lot of differences, too. And you don't just get to say things and make it true because you said it.
Yeah, well said. The other thing that I thought about a lot is the relationship of, so we're talking about the violence that has come up, some pretty nasty political rhetoric. And then you go back to the relationship of these young people who grew up playing PlayerUnknown Battleground and Fortnite and Call of Duty and, you know, all these video games where you're actually killing other humans, some of it in the name of war, some of it in the name of fun, whatever it is, and how they maybe become a little desensitized to, you know, when you really kill a person, you don't respawn, right? There's no respawning in real life. And I mean, I don't know, Adam, if you have any kind of opinion on this, but we're young enough, even me, that we played video games when we were younger, and so we did grow up with them. And now, granted, in my case, it was Asteroids and Defender, you know, and Pac-Man or whatever, but, we played video games. I'd get my hackles up when grown-ups, older people would say, oh, you're gonna turn into an assassin someday because you played, you know, Call of Duty or whatever it is, or Halo or whatever, and but... Man, I'm starting to think maybe, Adam, there is some sort of desensitization that is coming out of all this.
Yeah, I don't think any reasonable person can say that there's not some effect. Now, obviously, not everybody who plays Call of Duty has gone out and killed people,
right?
In real life. But I don't think when there is that special cocktail of mental capacity, right?
Mm-hmm.
How early you were exposed to it, other factors in your life.
Yeah.
And for some reason, when you get that perfect combination, it does seem to lead to violence. And with this, at least with the Charlie Kirk shooter, we know that that was the case, right? I mean, he was pretty heavily involved in a lot of these games. So I don't think you can say that, yes, I sit and spend hours a day. And with modern technology, some of these games are incredible graphics. I mean, they are very realistic. And you don't sit for hours a day shooting very lifelike people and not have it affect you in some way.
That's true.
With other factors that might be going on in your life.
There is, you know, the porn industry, the desensitivity of people when it comes to sex and women and stuff, you know, mostly men involved in porn. And you could say, man, why do we not then go ahead and apply that to the violent industry, the industry of killing people on video games or whatever? And I would submit that I think it's along the same lines.
I would too.
So
I would too.
Heavy stuff.
In my unexpert opinion, I would agree with you on that one.
Adam Snow is with me here on the Andy Griffin Show on this just a gorgeous Tuesday morning. Adam says it's cold. I say it's perfect. But
it will be perfect. It's just not in your parking lot. It was a little chilly. I'm just saying.
I'm cool with that. Now, Adam is a county commissioner. Adam, you know, tell us, I think we probably talked about it on the show, but it's maybe been a year or two. Tell us kind of your areas that you are. I know you commissioners, you kind of divide up your duties and what areas that you work on. What are your areas? What are your kind of milieu
We all work on all the things all the time. But it is a full-time job, and we have 23 offices and departments that we oversee.
Wow.
and work with. And so there are 9 elected officials. So we work with each of those elected offices, the county attorney, treasurer, recorder, clerk, auditor, sheriff, assessor. We work with all those all the time, but and they have their own jurisdictions, and then we have the departments that we directly oversee that fall underneath our jurisdiction. And so it's just too big. We're too big of a county to be able to handle all of them simultaneously, right? So we do have our kind of own portfolios. I tend to focus more on the federal issues. The things, you know, for a county that's 2/3 owned by the federal government and managed by the federal government, almost nothing that we do, or anything that we do has to touch the federal government. So,
yeah.
In some way. And so, I focus a lot on Zion National Park, on water, because most of the water is coming off of federal land. I focus a lot on federal land management through the BLM, the Forest Service, the, you know, whether it's roads and infrastructure that needs to cross federal land, power lines, things like that we can help with. Catastrophic wildfire. Obviously, we had the Forsyth fire this summer up on Pine Valley Mountain. That was a huge fire. So those issues, and then I deal a lot with economic development. Those are the main issues that I really kind of ran on, and that fits well within my wheelhouse. And then I'm actually the vice president. Next year, I'll automatically become the president of all Utah counties. And so I also deal a lot with statewide issues. I was just last week with President Adams of the Senate and with Speaker Mike Schultz from the House and meet with the governor regularly. And that's a great thing for Washington County, because it means that I'm the guy in the room, at least for the next few years. And, nice. And
we have a voice.
Washington County has been very well protected. And there's a couple things I learned and came right back and talked to the auditor and said, hey, guess what I just heard in these meetings that was going to happen. And so it's helpful for Washington County. I can protect our interests very well that way. So federal and statewide issues and then economic are kind of the things that I deal with a lot right now.
My mind immediately when you started talking about federal issues was the government shutdown. How has that affected how you do your job, I guess not completely shut down, but a skeleton crew, I guess, with the federal employees?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I actually heard this just yesterday. We were talking about it. And somebody said, you know, if the federal government shut down, I'm looking out here out your window, Andy, and there's a lot of people going about their normal daily lives. And
there sure is.
And there are certainly people that are hurting right now that this government shutdown has screwed them up, their business, you know, it depends on what they're doing. But there's also a lot of people that are just going about their normal lives. If you shut down local government for 21 days or whatever we're up to now, it would be...
That would be catastrophic.
I mean, it would be, yeah, so destructive in so many. No police, no fire, the roads, right? Your water shut off, your power, like all of those things that cities and counties and the state provide.
Yeah.
The jail is just closed all of a sudden, right? Like,
yeah,
we wouldn't be able to survive. But what? If the federal government shuts down, some ways, there's certain times where I'm like, and?
Yeah.
Who cares, right? Yeah. But for us, it really is effective. Our largest economic driver by far is Zion National Park, with over $1 billion spent a year from people visiting Zion's. And Zion has a skeleton crew right now, but they're open. But unfortunately, most people don't. Not all parks are open. So probably the biggest impact to us right now is in the immediate form is that you've got people that won't come to the park because they think they can't get in, because other parks they've heard they can't get in, and so they're just not coming, and so visitation is down. That's affecting hotels, that's affecting restaurants, that's affecting other businesses,
yeah.
Retail sales down, right? For if you own a store, you work at a store, from people, you know, about a third of all retail sales are through tourists in Washington County. So
it is hurting the county.
It is definitely hurting counties and cities as well. You may not, but it's not, I mean, it's directly tied to the government shutdown, but you may say, well, my business doesn't, we're not affected by the government. Well,
right.
Anything in retail certainly is, and anything in visitation in Washington County certainly is. Doesn't mean everything is. Other things are, you know, permitting certain things that we're trying to do. We've, you know, we had huge rainstorms recently, right? And again, that burn scar from the Forsyth fire, trying to get some approvals and things pushed through the Forest Service and through the BLM and you know, for infrastructure that are just being slowed down because, well, that person isn't on the isn't on the must work list, and so that guy's not at his desk and won't be until the government reopens again, you know. So it's definitely affecting us. You may not see it, but the impacts will be there for quite a while.
All right, well, we'll keep our fingers. Celeste Malloy was on yesterday, by the way, and she was talking about that. And in fact, she was kind of frustrated at the fact that everybody thinks that the House of Representatives should be in working on this. Well, they already passed it.
Yeah, they did.
They're waiting on the Senate to do something about it. Those seven senators to cross. I guess they have what, four of them have crossed the aisle, but they still need three more or something like that. So, but hopefully, we'll get that done now. We do need to get a break in. When we come back, though, I do want to talk about something that has to do with the feds, and it's that Northern Corridor, and we'll see where we're at on that. It is a key moment for that. We'll talk about that with Adam Snow when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:34 on KDXU. How are you guys doing today? Appreciate you being on the air with us, listening in, hanging out with me and Adam Snow, County Commissioner. And Adam, again, I really appreciate you guys coming on every month. And I know you guys rotated around, but and I think Gil doctors it a little bit so he can come more often. I think he does too.
We have our assistants, you know, keep manage the calendar, but. It does seem like he's here a little more often. Yeah, I think he split it like 4-1, you know.
He listens every day, too. I might get a text from Gil any second now saying, I do not doctor it.
But. Hey, Gil, I'm saying this right now. Sarah and Jan doctor it. If you're listening, I'm saying it right now out loud.
All right. Well, you know, either way, I appreciate you guys coming on. And Adam, like I was saying during the break, people couldn't hear us, but I really feel like you guys have been really upfront and honest about everything when you come on the show. You don't come in hiding things or whatever. And I love that. There used to be a radio host here in town that was not very kind to you guys and had all these claims about you guys. And she would say, well, they're this, this, and this, but without any kind of actual truth or proof behind any of it. And that kind of radio really, it gave radio in this town a bad name. There are still a couple of people I know who will not do radio because of that person. And I said, but I'm not like that. And they're like, yeah, but I got burned. I'm not doing that again. Yeah. So.
And the one you're talking about has never said one word to me or asked me a question, never texted, never called.
Wow.
We have. Wow. Has said lots of horrible things, but has never actually spoken to me ever in my life.
Yeah. I don't even understand that. Yeah. Like. And again, I'll say it again, like I've said in the past, I tend to put trust and belief in people until they give me a reason not to. This other person is the opposite. They don't trust people until they get given a reason to trust them. And I think that's a terrible way to live life. So anyway, all right, let's talk Northern Corridor, Adam.
Okay.
It is, I guess, a key period right now for that.
It is, yeah. So let's see, 2 weeks ago, the public comment period opened for what we call the draft. We throw around a lot of acronyms in public land management, and one of them is NEPA, and it's the National Environmental Policy Act. Yes. And so there's a new decision, a draft decision has been released. It was released a little over 2 weeks ago, and then it opens up a 30-day public comment period. And when the public all gets to read it and say, hey, you know, this is a decision that we're contemplating, and what do you think about this? And so you can send in your comments. You can go to the BLM website. The BLM is the lead agency on this, and so you can go to the BLM website, and I think we actually have a link through the Washington County website as well. If you go to washco.utah.gov, and we've got a link there that you can go submit your comment, either in support, against. You can ask questions. You can, and then after that closes, then they will. There's a certain period of time when the BLM will address each of those comments and concerns, and. And then they'll make a final decision. We'll see how that goes. They can tweak the decision as well based on those comments. They can say, oh, you know what? That's actually very substantive. You know, we haven't considered that. Let's address it. Let's study something more. Let's you know, review this or maybe bring in some other information to see, you know, make sure that we've done this the right way. And then, once that's all addressed, then they'll make a final decision.
Can you give us real quickly just a brief synopsis of beginning to end the Northern Corridor, what it is? For those that don't know. I know brief
is going to be tough. Let's see. You got to be in by 10, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, the really brief synopsis is this. Road, we plan in the county in conjunction with the cities, we plan about 40 years out. For major arterial roads and things, not your little surface, you know, your neighborhood streets, but the big arteries.
Right.
This has been on the books since the mid 90s, knowing that eventually we'd need it. And the reason why, and everybody, the main question people ask is, why do we need a northern corridor? Go somewhere else. Well, we can't. And that's because most of Washington County is the places that we live and visit and recreate. And it's kind of a big shallow U, and you've got Ivins and Santa Clara to the west, and then St. George kind of in the middle and Washington City, and then it kind of goes back towards Leeds, and hence it's kind of a shallow U.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people need to get, I've got 210,000 residents and about 9 million visitors a year that I've got to get side to side in that county.
Right.
And the pinch point for everything is the cut in the hill for I-15. Okay. That's where all the traffic has to go through, right? Now, you can go, because we got that big hill there, right, Foremaster. So people can go around the bottom of Foremaster. But if you're in Santa Clara, you're not going to take the Southern Parkway or Riverside to get around the southern end of that hill. People just don't travel that far. And so you've got to get through, whether you take the Boulevard or Red Cliffs Parkway or anything, that cut is asphalt to asphalt, wall-to-wall asphalt right now. It is 4 lanes of frontage road on the north, 6 lanes of I-15 in the middle, 4 lanes of frontage road on the south.
Right.
There's not another inch to put another lane anywhere. And you say, okay, well, what if we made it wider? And honestly, yes, you can. You've got to buy up a ton of businesses along the way. It's extremely expensive, not just the removal of the dirt. Salt Lake's been removing hills for, decades, but you could do it. But it just kind of, it just buys a little bit of time. It doesn't solve problems long term, and it's extremely expensive for the businesses that Bath Fitters that was just built. Multiple businesses along there would have to be bought and then leveled.
Yeah, basically the government would come and say, "Look, sorry, we're taking it.
Condemn it." Yep.
Yeah.
But you have to pay fair market value for them. They don't just get to take it.
Right.
Nobody
wants
that.
Right.
So if we can't put more people through the funnel, right, and nobody's going to go further south to get
way around it
for no reason, then the only other way around it is to the north, hence a northern corridor.
Right.
So that's the term for it. And what it does, it takes off just north of Pioneer Park and then cuts across the Desert Reserve and connects over by Green Spring and then to Exit 13 near Coral Canyon and, where the new Finley Hyundai dealership is and stuff over there.
So on its surface, we got a road that maybe Exit 13 cuts across, ends up meeting Snow Canyon Parkway, kind of over there.
Red Cliffs Parkway.
Yeah.
Yep.
So on its surface, you're like, that seemed like a pretty good idea, but there's a problem.
There is. It goes through the National Conservation Area, and that's where this comes in. And so again, you said brief, so I'm going to make it as brief as possible. But in 2009, so there was a desert reserve when the Mojave Desert Tortoise was listed as threatened. We said, okay, we're going to set aside. There's a huge agreement between the federal government and Washington County on behalf of all of our citizens. And we said, we will set this aside, about 65,000 acres of the desert, Red Cliff Desert Reserve, as a reserve for habitat for the desert tortoise. And by doing that, we're going to say that every other homeowner, business owner, anybody who owns land doesn't have to go get their own permit from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which would be prohibitive, right? Nobody's going to go do that. It's a massive process and would stop 100% of all growth in Washington County on day one. So, and would have for the last 25 years. So, we will set aside this reserve and then everybody else gets to develop their property without a permit. And that'll be kind of one massive permit for everybody else. Then in 2009, there was a bipartisan bill signed by President Obama that said, hey, we'll actually elevate the desert reserve and put a national conservation over the top of it, national conservation area, which is higher protection, more restrictive of what you can do with it. And so we'll set that aside. But we get a road, and in that same exact law, it specifically says the Secretary of the Interior, which is who oversees the BLM and the Fish and Wildlife Service, shall designate one or more alternative routes in conjunction with Washington County and St. George City for a northern corridor through the National Conservation Area. So without that law, there would be no National Conservation Area, and there'd be no road. With the law, there is an NCA and a road.
Yeah.
So they got their NCA. We never got the road. So we applied for a road in 2017. The county did. It was granted in 2020, the right-of-way for it, and then it was immediately sued on under the Biden administration by a small group here called Conserve Southwest Utah, a small environmental group. And they enlisted some of their friends, Center for Biological Diversity, and others that have armies of attorneys, and this is all they do is sue the federal government on things. And the Biden administration, being friendly to them, settled and said, sure, we will revoke the right-of-way and give you $437,000 in cash. I don't know why they needed $437,000 in cash, but that's kind of their MO. That's the way they operate. And so your taxpayer dollars went and paid a small group here. And then it revoked the right-of-way. Now we've asked the federal government to look at that again. And we've got lots of things we could sue on, but honestly, it was a bad deal because, and I'll wrap in 30 seconds here, is because the offset, the road was going to disturb 154 acres of habitat. And we know, obviously, yes, there's grasses and there's rocks and dirt and stuff that's there now, and you're going to put asphalt on it. So it will disturb it. We're not saying that it won't. But it's 154 acres. The offset for that, since the desert reserve is broken into 5 management zones, 1 being on the west side, 5 being over by Leeds, we said we'll create a new management area called Zone 6. Yeah. And Zone 6, if you read the articles, that's why it's called Zone 6. It wasn't called that beforehand. We'll set aside a new area, Zone 6, which is half owned by the School Kids of Utah, SITLA, and half owned by the BLM, but it's just regular BLM land. There's no additional protection on it. You can mine it, you can ranch it, whatever you want to do. And so we set aside almost 7,000 acres as the offset for that 154 acres that the road is going to disturb.
So like a trade.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
And that there's 10 times as many tortoises over there as what the 154 acres would displace. And we have biologists that will go in front of it. We're not going to kill the tortoises. We'll pick them up. We'll move them. They'll be treated and made sure they've got water and everything. They'll be perfectly fine. We fence the new road so they can't come on. There's culverts and underpasses and everything so they can, and we know scientifically that they'll use it no problem. So that's why, so the road is a good thing. If you care about the tortoise, 7,000 acres to 154. I got a 9-year-old daughter. She can do that math.
Yeah.
Right. That's a pretty easy thing. 10 to 1 tortoises in Zone 6 compared to the 154 acres. Yeah, that's a good thing for the tortoise. If you care about open space, I just spoke to the, climbing groups on Saturday in Mose Valley. Because if we don't get the road, then there is no Zone 6 because you don't have to buy the 154 acres, right? So there's no Zone 6 at all. As of today, there's no Zone 6. Doesn't exist. So we're trying to put it back in. And all of the Bearclaw Poppy Trail, the Zen Trail, Mose Valley, all the cool areas that we love to recreate in open space is open for development because it's owned privately. It's not federal land. So we can go sell that and develop it. And they have already taken proposals to do so if it goes away. Now, they're willing to maintain our agreement that we had before. So we're hoping that this decision goes forward. It is the only way to protect that land. And people keep saying, well, maybe there's another way. It's worth about $1 billion. So unless somebody's going to send a collection plate around and get $1 billion, how are you going to buy that land from the school kids?
Yeah.
And they can't just give it away. That's against the law. So that's what we're up against right now. We're hoping this is the only way to preserve land, to preserve the habitat for the tortoise, to accomplish our transportation needs, and not have to come up with $1 billion in cash. So this is the way to do it, and nobody else has ever brought any other reasonable proposal forward. And I'll end with this, because it was brought up on Saturday. Some of the environmental groups, and again, it's Conserve Southwest Utah. That's the one that's the pain in the side right now, the thorn in the side, is that they sued on this and said, well, there's other ways. They didn't bring any proposals for those other ways. But when the Biden administration a year ago rolled this back, they've done nothing. For the last year, they haven't raised one penny. They haven't talked about a plan. They got what they wanted and they went quiet. So if they keep talking about how much they want to try and preserve this and, hey, there's other plans, how come we haven't seen one? How come you haven't lifted a finger for a year? I think that's very telling as to where their motivation is.
Yeah, well said. Kind of like the senators in the government shutdown. They don't actually have an agenda. Their agenda is we hate Trump and we don't want the government to be opened. And last thing I will just comment real quickly on that is the thing that drives me crazy is a lot of these groups are like, save the tortoise, save the tortoise, save the tortoise. But they don't think about the human element, about the pollution that will come if we don't have an alternate route. Yep. The sitting in traffic on Boulder, the you know, getting from there over, I'm pointing toward the freeway and the cut in the rock over to there, and I'm pointing toward Ivins and Tuacon and Black Desert and all that. And they don't think about that stuff. All they think about is save the tortoise, save the tortoise. And I'm not anti-tortoise. I'm not anti-environment. I'm just saying, look, we have a pretty darn good solution for this, and then everybody gets saved. Why can't we look at that?
And they say things like, well, it'll be filled with Mavericks and Taco Bells. No, we have roads through the NCA already right now. If you take Red Cliffs Parkway, right north of Pioneer Park, there's not one house, building.
No Mavericks,
Maverick,
no,
Taco
nothing,
Bell.
No.
That's a road that goes through it because it's a right-of-way only for a road. There is no development rights with it. So they're just being dishonest, and they know that's the case.
Frustrating. All right, we'll take a final commercial break. More with Adam Snow right after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning in. Adam is here. Adam and I have been friends for a few years now, and I like Adam. I think he's a pretty cool dude. Although,
well, thanks, Andy. You
golf, right? You
know, I do golf.
I am such a bad golfer.
Well, you didn't say do I golf well. You said, do you golf? Do I go on the course? Do I carry my clubs? Yes. I'm bad at it.
But back in the early 90s, I had really one kid, and I had time and money, and not a lot of money, but enough money that I golfed a lot. And the last time I really golfed, I was really serious. I golfed in the Nevada Pro-Am. And that was a really cool experience. Got to meet Andre Agassi and Greg Maddux. Ooh, there were a lot of Reggie Jackson was there. It was a really cool experience. But that's really the last tournament I ever played in. And the last time I regularly picked up the clubs was 30 years ago. So
I golfed in the Black Desert Pro-Am last year.
Okay.
And I golfed just a couple days before. And I thought, you know, I played really well, Andy.
Yeah?
For me, it was amazing. I thought, you know, they may ask me to stay. They, you know, if I played this well in the Pro-Am, they may say, hey, we got one more slot. You know, kind of a Happy Gilmore moment.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you win this thing, and we're going to ask you to join the Pro Tour. The pro I played with was Cameron Champ, who drives the ball a mile. I mean, he's a big-time pro. And I almost killed him. And you can ask the state legislators that were with me. The ball came off the toe of my club.
Uh-oh.
Straight at him. He was standing there talking to his caddy and his coach, kind of prepping for the next day for when the tournament started. The ball goes flying at him. He dives one way. The caddy dives the other way. I drill his bag with my golf ball. It bounces off his bag over the grandstands. The audience is all, you know, the spectators are watching my ball fly over. I run over, I'm helping him get dusted off, and he was very, very kind, and, oh, it happens to the best of us. And I was like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah,
no,
it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. He goes, no, I knocked a guy out cold last year. I said, really? He goes, yeah, you know, he shouldn't have been standing there. You know, along the rope line. But basically, you know, it's okay. You get a bad shot once in a while. But I realized at that moment, they were not going to ask me to stay. And maybe actually may ask me to never come back again. But, yeah, I do enjoy golf.
I went golfing with my dad about 40 years ago, and of course down in Texas, and same deal. Hit it right at him. He said he froze for 1 second. The ball's coming right at him. He's like, what do I do? Do I hit the deck? Do I go right? Do I go left? So he froze for a second, and then the last second he just dropped to the ground and went right where his head would have been. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So,
lessons learned. Cam is coming back this weekend for the PGA, and I'm golfing in the Pro-Am tomorrow.
Are you? Okay.
They made us fill out our, you know, which pros do you want to play with? I did not put him down.
No.
Because I don't want to do that to him again.
Because I heard he brought a helmet with him, just in case.
I may take one from Utah Tech, just in case there.
All right, so the Black Desert, it's a bank's name now. Do you remember the
Bank of Utah?
Bank of Utah Black Desert Championship here. Starts, I guess technically it starts today, but, you know, the primes. But the actual tournament is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yes.
And it's a pretty cool feather in the cap. I remember I lived in northern Utah when Jeremy Ranch got the big PGA Tour stop for a while, and that went away now. And so this is the only tour stop in the state of Utah. Yep. Pretty cool deal, huh?
It is. It's huge. We've got better and better golfers coming. Matt McCarty, who won this last year, went on to, I forget which tournament he finished. He finished top 10. And, I mean, he was right there in a subsequent, one of the majors. He's done real well. We've got great golfers coming. It's going to be gorgeous weather. It's a huge, golf is a big deal for Washington County. We've got 14 courses within 20 miles of each other. I had to fly back from meetings last week, and I watched 19 golf bags get loaded off the plane here in St. George.
Wow.
Now, I'm going to assume that somebody, I don't fly with my club, so I'm going to assume that somebody is also going to rent when they get here. But that 19 golf clubs, bags came off the plane, and talking to the guy next to me, he was, I've got my wife and I got my two buddies and we're playing. My daughter's here. He was pointing on the plane, who's with him, and we're all here to play. And then we're going to go play in Cedar City and we're going to go do this. It's a big deal economically. And they come and they spend a lot of money and they enjoy our courses and then they leave. And that's kind of what we want. So
yeah, don't stay. We'd love you. Love to have you here. We'd love to have you leave.
Drop off your money and then leave.
We got 1 minute left, Adam.
Hey, Andy, thanks for having me on. I know you're retiring. I'm not just saying it. I am torn up about this. I have thoroughly enjoyed. I mentioned during the break, and I'll say it again, that on Sunday evenings, I look at my calendar for the week, and every 3 months, I see on a Tuesday morning, hey, I've got open mic with Andy, and it's my turn to come on, and I thoroughly enjoy it. You've been a phenomenal and gracious host for us. You ask some very good questions, and let us, explain to your listeners and of what's going on in their county and in their community, and we're really going to miss you. I value the friendship, and you've been a great host, and I can tell you Washington County is going to be worse when you get off the air.
Thank you, Adam. Very kind words. I appreciate you coming on. And again, my friendship with you, Gil, and Victor has been very valuable to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having us on.
We've used it up, folks. Adam, thanks for coming on. I'm Andy Griffin. Be back again tomorrow with another guest. I think Zach Renstrom's on tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.